Hello, it's Mark Ash from Reader Supported News. We're here today with Norman Solomon and Jeff Cullen of RootsAction.org. There's a lot to talk about. They've got a new initiative. Roots Action has a new initiative they've introduced with regard to the upcoming election. And I think this is an important thing for progressive voters to take into consideration. Welcome. Hello, Norman and Jeff.
Thanks, Mark.
With you.
So let's talk a little bit about the recent press release that you sent out that is really kind of lays out an initiative to get progressive voters to actually vote for Joe Biden, with the caveat that there will be policy battles to come. Norman?
Well, that's one of the caveats. The other is swing states is where the action is. Frankly, as a Californian and Jeff, somebody in New York, we don't care how people in our states vote because it's a lock for the Democratic nominee. Likewise, if somebody lives in, say, Alabama or Alaska, it's a lock for the odious Trump. So I think it's both that we've got to fight Biden after he becomes president, hopefully given the option of Trump, Biden will become president. And also that in the meantime, we don't want to waste a moment or energy or arguments with people living in the 38 or so non-swing states about how the heck they vote. It's really not a politically productive dynamic to get into that. But the swing states, the dozen of them, absolutely crucial. We do not want, of course, to have to deal with the horrible prospect of another 4 years of Trump in the White House.
So our slogan is vote Trump out in swing states, then challenge Biden. So it's a two-part campaign. And we're aiming this campaign at real progressives, at really diehard Bernie supporters. And we're persuading them, if you live in the swing states, here's the two steps. And I think the reason that Norman and I and RootsAction.org and our initiative, VoteTrumpOut.org, the reason we have credibility is because people know we're serious about step two. You know, we're organizing progressives not just to vote Trump out. That's step one. But step two is to stay organized, stay principled, stay militant, stay connected, and challenge Biden from day one. And I think it's because we have credibility that voting for Biden strategically in swing states is just the bridge to the future. It's just a tool to get Trump out so that we've empowered the growing progressive tendencies in our country, including the enlarging squad. You know, we've got all these progressives in the House and some in the Senate, and they will have far more power with a Democrat in the White House. Another slogan we've been using is, Biden is the better opponent for the left to have in the White House than Trump. That's obvious.
So that's a really important point. This brings us to the next really important point, is if it's going to be an administration that progressives feel that they can motivate to move forward, which seems to be an underlying meme here, then it really seems to me that you would gain a lot of information and a lot of guidance from who Joe Biden picks as vice president. How important is that pick?
Very important. If he chooses Susan Rice, if he chooses Kamala Harris, it makes our job more difficult. And, of course, Jeff and I, Roots Action, we have labored very hard to get Bernie Sanders to be the nominee. We've labored very hard to illuminate the really bad Republican-light record of Joe Biden over four decades. But we're stuck now, it seems very clear, with Biden as the nominee. So who the vice presidential pick is will be very important. That said, Biden has a record of serving Wall Street, not Main Street, not really being responsive to not just progressive political agendas, but agendas of decency. So it's hard to be optimistic. We're going to have to slog ahead. As Cornel West has said, this is going to boil down to a choice in the general election for president between neoliberalism and neo-fascism. Anybody on the left, and of course there are some folks who say this, but anybody on the left who claims there's not a significant difference, I think it's just engaging in what I call magical realism in the political realm. And it's fine in literature to engage in magical realism. It's dangerous to do that, and it's really disorienting and ultimately destructive to do that in the political realm.
And I'll tell you this, I agree with everything Norman just said. I'm expecting Biden to choose Kamala Harris or Susan Rice, and those are not great choices. They're not progressive. They're corporatist. They're pro-militarist. If Biden shocked us and chose Elizabeth Warren or Karen Bass, yeah, it would be a lot easier to get progressive voters in swing states to vote for Biden and the Biden ticket. But to us, it's irrelevant. I mean, obviously, we've been pushing for Warren. We've been pushing for Bass. We've been pushing for Barbara Lee. We've been pushing for Senator Nina Turner to be the VP. But it's not going to happen. And for us, the issue is that the left is ascending in this country. The remarkable upset victory of Cori Bush in St. Louis, Ferguson, Missouri, against a 10-term incumbent, which, you know, a little earlier in my neck of the woods in New York City, we had this great progressive educator, Jamal Bowman, who beat a 15-term corporate Democratic incumbent. So the squad in Washington is going to be bigger than ever, more progressive and militant than ever. But if Trump is the president, all of these amazing grassroots victories, these people will be marginalized, and Trump will keep telling them, go back to the countries you came from, even though almost all of them were born in the United States. If Biden is the president, these progressive Congress members will be at the White House. They'll be making demands. They'll be expressing anger at corporate moves from the Biden White House and getting coverage like they never have before, because now they're players. So, I mean, to me, Biden is a mere tool. Chomsky said it best. Noam Chomsky, he's if you go to our website at votetrumpout.org, you'll see a two-minute video from Chomsky. But he said it best. I live in the swing state of Arizona. I'd vote for a lamppost to get Trump out.
So what is the likelihood that Joe Biden might actually, I mean, Bernie Sanders has signaled a degree of support for Joe Biden. He's also sounded a note of optimism that Joe Biden could potentially be a progressive partner. We really haven't seen that Joe Biden in the past. The Joe Biden we've seen in the past has been someone who has been open to arguments, progressive arguments, but his overwhelming tendency has been corporatist, conservative, and when it came to the police, unilaterally supportive of the police,
Yep. Both
in terms of his rhetoric and his actions on Capitol Hill. What is the chance that Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, you know, guidance here may lead in a direction that, you know, Joe Biden might actually have a little reawakening here?
Well, I'd answer that a couple of ways. One is that if you look at his record, he went with the way he thought. He's an opportunist. There are credit card companies and so forth based in Delaware, serve them from the jump. When you look at the 1970s, he saw a backlash against school busing for desegregation. He jumped on that backlash. It was with odious speeches. In the 1990s, he saw the anti-crime
frenzy, and he jumped on that with pushing the now odious, infamous crime bill through. And so he does surely understand whatever his cognitive limitations are right now, that there is, as Jeff said a couple of minutes ago, there is a leftward progressive trend in the country. And to some extent, he certainly he'll try to blunt and co-opt it, but he has to deal with it and make some concessions. He's already done that with the Democratic Party platform to some limited but significant degree. The other is a sort of historical counterpoint. In 1932, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected president, he was not perceived as a leftist. He was not conceived of or seen as a progressive populist or responsive particularly to progressive populism. He just ousted a terrible, economically repressive president named Herbert Hoover. Well, now we have a terrible, repressively awful president who's really, really bad, you know, let us count the ways, Donald Trump. So it's not impossible, as one might say about what turned out to be the case with FDR, that somebody who's elected as basically a centrist, somebody who opposed deficit spending for people, you know, for opposed really doing what government needed to do to help humanity inside the borders of the United States. It's quite, if we use the past as a counterpoint, it's quite possible that a Biden administration could be pulled in a surprisingly progressive direction. I would just, you know, close my little soliloquy here by pointing out that there's a perhaps apocryphal meeting that we're told about, A. Philip Randolph and other progressives going to the White House and laying out a progressive agenda of the time for FDR, and we're told FDR said, I agree with you, make me do it. And that could be read two ways. It was exploited as a narrative under Obama because when it was recounted, some of the corporatists said, yeah, it's on you, just it's your fault if it doesn't get enacted. No, it's ultimately the president's fault, but if we can organize, we could create tremendous change in this country, potentially.
Yeah, and Norman's made a good point that during the period he's describing, when FDR runs as pretty much a centrist and then becomes the most progressive president of the century, there were these huge social movements from below making demands, union movements, socialist movements. They didn't have the internet then, but we do. And I would argue that the progressive movements, whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's Sunrise Movement for the Green New Deal, the Medicare for All movement that includes thousands and thousands of nurses and doctors, we have a lot of social movements and they're organized on the internet. And, you know, Roots Action alone has 1.2 million activists on our email list, and they take action. So the issue will be, what will the left bring to bear on a President Joe Biden? And Mark, you raised the Bernie issue. I mean, Bernie suspended his campaign early. He immediately started talking friendly with Biden. They immediately started developing some platform policies in unity. And obviously, Biden knows not only to get elected, but to have credibility with millions and millions of working class and young Americans, he's got to keep Bernie happy. The last thing Biden wants in January or February or March is Bernie Sanders coming out of a White House meeting denouncing Biden. So I believe we have more leverage because of the grassroots upsurge behind Bernie in 2016 and 2020, behind AOC and all these victors who have knocked off corporate Democrats in congressional races. We have a lot of momentum and we have a lot of leverage. So it's up to us to, number one, defeat Trump, and that's the key in those 10, 12 swing states. And then number two, put the pressure on Biden so that all of the pressure comes from the left. If Trump is defeated soundly, and that's our hope, it all comes down to these we have 10 swing states on our list. Trump won all of them in 2016. If the Democrats can win three of them, Biden's in the White House. If they can win five or six of them, it's a landslide. And the Republican Party may be in disarray with all sorts of finger pointing.
So well, that leads us to an important point. There are two prizes on the table in this election, and those are really prizes that are on the table in every election. It's not just the White House, which is very, very important.
Yeah.
And particularly evicting Donald Trump, who is, you know, he's not stable and he's not a genius. He's a dangerous force with the powers of the presidency at his disposal.
Yeah.
But we have an opportunity here. There seems to be a glimmer of an opportunity for the Democrats to capture both houses of Congress and the White House. That would open a door to some legislative priorities. Let me ask you what you guys think would be the most important first step. What's the priority list under those circumstances? And I should predicate it by saying, I guess I have to ask the other question is, what could possibly be accomplished without voting rights?
Yes.
Well, there's so many key issues that are interlaced. As Barry Commoner said, everything is connected. Certainly, an intelligent and forceful federal policy around the coronavirus pandemic. You know, we're already several months without it, and that is something that needs to happen right away with a new president. Economic justice being part of that. You know, the proposals for $2,000 a month floor for everybody in the country. Certainly an urgent enactment of the Green New Deal, as you allude to, Mark, legislative and executive actions for voting rights. A very steep climb is to begin to dismantle what Martin Luther King Jr. called the madness of militarism, and unfortunately, Joe Biden is really enmeshed in it. And the Supreme Court looms large. Alas, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is not in great health, to put it mildly, and there will be, I think it's clear, at least one vacancy during the next presidential term. Of course, that means Senate control, not only Senate control taken away from Republicans, but really whipping the votes, as the saying goes, and putting enormous pressure on Republican wannabes, semi-Republicans like Joe Manchin from West Virginia, so they don't, as is sometimes their wont, voting for awful Supreme Court nominees. And I should mention that as we talk about swing states, there might be quibbles of one or two of which belong on the list, but it's pretty clear that these 10 I'm going to mention, 10 or so, are on the list in alphabetical order. These are swing states where people voting for Biden is going to be absolutely crucial. Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Wisconsin. Those are the big swing states.
Jeff?
Yeah, and there's two states that divide up their electoral votes, so the winner of the state doesn't necessarily get all of the votes. So besides the 10 states Norman just mentioned, Maine's second congressional district, which is the 80% north of the state, that's a swing district. If I live there, even though I don't like a lot of Biden's history, I'm voting Biden. Same thing in Nebraska's second district around Omaha. But, I mean, Norman mentioned a lot of the things that are immediately on the agenda. What I'm excited about is, for the first time in years, because of Bernie Sanders and Markey and the Senate, and because of Barbara Lee, and I think with AOC and others in the House, for the first time we had an initiative to cut the military budget and take those resources and put them in poor and working class communities in terms of education, health care, and what have you. And it did not pass in either the Senate or the House, But I believe that the fight in the year, assuming Biden and especially Mark, as you mentioned, perhaps control of both houses, that would be an enormous achievement. But if that were the case, I think, as Norman said, the madness of militarism is what King talked about. Our military budget is utterly bloated. Most of the discretionary funds goes to the military. So I see new fights about the federal budget and the move by progressives to, quote, defund the Pentagon, cut the Pentagon's budget, and take some of that money toward human and environmental needs.
I guess I just wonder how progress is possible without voting rights. See, this is the linchpin that makes those other agenda points possible. It's the pressure from the voters. If you haven't got that, this is when we talk about the civil rights movement. What Martin Luther King went to the White House to demand of Lyndon Johnson was voting rights.
Yep.
It wasn't a nebulous agenda. They wanted the right to vote. And that they knew that that would equal progress, and that's why the John Birch crowd, the Jim Crow crowd, so vehemently opposed voting rights.
Well, in 2020 and going forward, that's the chicken and egg, because especially this year, every one out of 10, the election is going to shape redistricting, which is one of the voter suppression techniques. You know, you have these really bizarrely shaped districts because they've been gerrymandered by Republican-dominated legislatures or governors. And so it's crucial now. This is part of the wave dynamic where it is, as you alluded to, Mark, not only the president, not only the Senate and the House. The tendency is for there to be a coattail effect. If Trump loses badly, then that means that Biden, unwittingly in some respects, is going to have big coattails and pull in Democrats to gain control of the Senate and to gain control of or bigger majorities in many of the state legislatures, who then will use the census data that is now being accumulated this year to redistrict themselves in the state legislatures and to redistrict U.S. House seats. And that could, in turn, elect more progressive, less odious members of the House and Senate and state legislatures who will stop this assault on voting rights, this racist and xenophobic assault that has really spiraled us in exactly the wrong political directions.
And if I could add a quick postscript, I mean, you remember when Trump won in 2016, he immediately announced a commission that was going to investigate all this voter fraud. And obviously he was aimed at, people of color, and they're committing voter fraud. And it was a hoax. And the commission never really launched. Well, it's my view that if we can bury Trump in some of these swing states and get, we already have the House, I would love to see real investigations, public hearings on Republican efforts in various states to suppress the vote of young people and people of color. It would be amazing to see. I mean, we don't need – I see Greg Palast on, reader-supported news. And it would be great to have the real investigative journalists and investigators at public hearings talking about the shenanigans that have gone on in the last few years from Georgia to other states. So I would love to see – a presidential commission and certainly congressional hearings on voter suppression that is generally specifically targeted people of color.
Norman Solomon, Jeff Cohen, rootsaction.org. Greatly appreciate you spending a few minutes with Reader Supported News and our readers and listeners as well. Thank you so very much. Look forward to having you back again soon.
Thanks a lot, Mark. And I hope people go to votetrumpout.org. Thanks.
Okay. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Thanks, Mark. You too. Thanks. Keep up the great work. Bye-bye.